Today's a sad and tragic day here in the city of Los Angeles. Lost a police officer in the line of duty. The first police officer lost in the line of duty in SWAT's history. Another officer down. All of us extend our condolences, our prayers, our heartfelt sympathy to the families, to all of the officers of SWAT and the Los Angeles Police Department. It was called last night, a few minutes after the shooting. Chief Pasinger and Chief McDonald, I was at the side of Officer Veenstra before he went into surgery, told that surgery went well. I can tell you that for me this is a particularly personal loss because both individuals were assigned to my children last year. I knew both individuals, both Randy Simmons, who was assigned to my daughter, and Officer Veenstra, who was assigned overall to that detail. These mics are... Anytime we lose an officer here in the city of Los Angeles, we're reminded just what a dangerous job it is to be an officer here in the city of Los Angeles. I can tell you that I'm very proud of the men and women of the LAPD at this moment. Very proud of the command staff and SWAT unit. Particularly, my prayers are with the family of Officer Simmons at this time. This was obviously an unexpected and tragic loss for them. I'm going to give an opportunity for our chief, who's been on top of this from the beginning, to give a few words around the details of this matter. I do want to say to you, because we gave a briefing earlier, I just want to remind you there are some things the police department can't share. And so they'll be as open as possible to responding to your inquiries and your questions, always balancing your right to know with the need to investigate and the need to protect evidence at this time. And with that, I'd like to call up the Chief of Police of the Los Angeles Police Department, William Bratton.
I'll be joined in a few moments by Chief Mike Moore, who briefed you this morning. He'll give you a brief update again. He was the incident commander on the scene throughout the evening last night, and he'll have most of the details. The mayor mentioned that we are not at liberty to give you some of the information that you would like to have, that we would like to have. This is a very extensive and multi-pronged investigation. ATF and the Los Angeles Fire Department Arson Squad are working in conjunction with our Force Investigation Division, which does our administrative investigation of arson-involved shootings, and our robbery homicide that does the criminal investigation. Fire Department and ATF are just finishing up and will be turning the crime scene over to us so that we can begin the processing with our criminal and administrative investigations. To give you some example of why we are not able to share some information with you as we go along, that information changes even as we're standing here. Preliminary information last night over the 911 system was that there may have been as many as six people in the home. I think the earlier briefing you had this morning, we accounted for five individuals, including what we believe to be the shooter. We believe that based on a report from one of the investigators going through the house this morning, that there in fact may be in fact another victim inside that home. So we are, even at this stage of the game, not certain how many victims we have. To just give you an example of how methodical this has to be and how we have to get our questions answered before we can answer many of yours. On behalf of the department, I extend certainly to the families of our officers, the deceased officer, as well as the seriously injured officer still recovering in the hospital. I just visited both at the hospital. We additionally had two other officers during the initial assault who were injured, we believe, by potentially bullet fragments or other fragments that struck them as they were trying to enter the house. So a total of four Los Angeles police officers that were injured, one killed, one seriously injured, and two others minor injuries during the initial assault. The caliber of these officers is incredible. They represent the best of the best. Before giving over Mike Moore to you to give you some of the details, many of which you got this morning, I want to share with you some information about these officers. Like the mayor, I had the opportunity through a variety of means to know them, not intimately, although this morning with the many shared remembrances by their colleagues, I spoke to the mother, wife, and sister of our deceased officer, Mandy Simmons. I want to just share with you an award that was given to Officer Andy Simmons in 2005 at the Los Angeles Police Foundation that I think speaks to the man that was lost this morning, a man who loved his community, loved his family, loved his God, and loved this department. Officer Vinstra, also Jimmy, also an extraordinary individual. Let me just read you this award to give you a sense of the character of the officer that we have lost, that the city of Los Angeles has lost. Officer Simmons has a distinguished career in the Los Angeles Police Department with more than 27 years on the job, 20 of them assigned to SWAT. For the past 12 years, he's been assistant squad leader, serving as mentor and peer leader to other members of the team. Lieutenant Albanese, commanding officer of SWAT, described him as the rock on which all others sought to anchor themselves. He is also one of the most tenured members of the crisis negotiation team, a skilled and invaluable negotiator for the LAPD in dealing with suspects and suicidal individuals. We honor Officer Simmons for his work with SWAT's outreach program to Orthopedic Hospital in Los Angeles. Throughout the year, Officer Simmons is liaison to the staff of Orthopedic Hospital involving SWAT members in various functions with the hospital. They bring comfort and hope to the children who suffered serious injuries or devastating illnesses. Each year, Officer Simmons coordinates a Christmas toy drive for the patients whose families are financially challenged. He oversees the toy drive for SWAT and arranges for the toys to be delivered to the hospital by SWAT officers, who then helps Santa Claus in presenting the gifts to the children. This successful program requires great organizational ability, and Officer Simmons has led it since its inception on his own time. Officer Simmons also serves staff minister for the Glory Christian Fellowship International in Carson. His focus is mentoring children through a program he established in 1977, Glory Kids. It brings Sidewalk Sunday School on a well-equipped truck to inner-city children using music, dance, drama, games, and activities. His father, in a conversation with Chief Rapoli, indicated that Officer Simmons, his son, had brought many, many children to God. Officer Simmons believes it is important to bring a message of hope and personal growth to children as early as possible so they become productive members of their communities. He is an exemplary role model and mentor. Officer Simmons has awarded the Police Foundation Crystal Angel for his deep commitment to children and for the positive impact he has had on children and their families in his community of faith at Orthopedic Hospital and throughout Los Angeles. Just wanted to read that to you to give you a sense of the man that was lost this morning in the performance of his duties. Also, Police Officer James Vinstra, 1999 Medal of Valor winner, our highest award. On the evening of May 27, 1997, Metropolitan Division Special Weapons and Tactics SWAT Officer James Vinstra became involved in a gunfight with a domestic violence suspect. The suspect had previously opened fire on two Glendale detectives who were trying to locate him as part of a domestic violence investigation. A tip led the detectives to a warehouse. As the detectives entered the building, they were met with semi-automatic fire, causing one of the detectives to fall wounded from his injury. Previous rescue attempts by the LAPD responding units did not extract the downed detective and resulted in gunshot wounds to several officers. A Sylvester and his SWAT unit deployed into two teams, one to provide cover and the other to rescue the Glendale detective. The plan in place, SWAT officers fired a noise flash diversionary device into the warehouse, similar to some of the activities here this morning. The rescue team courageously entered and positioned themselves at the detective's side. Our subventionist team members covered the rescue team, effectively suppressing the suspect's fire and enabling the officers to retrieve the Glendale officer, who unfortunately was now deceased due to his injuries. The SWAT unit redeployed to search for the suspect, who ended the standoff with a fatal self-inflicted gunshot wound. For his courageous actions and discipline, he was awarded the Department Medal of Valor. I think it's important, as you report on this story, to have a sense of the tremendous loss to the SWAT unit, to the residents of this city, certainly to his family, and to those that he sought to help. And certainly our prayers and best wishes go out to the officer in the hospital now who was shot in the face and is in the intensive care unit at the hospital. This will be an exhaustive investigation, as they always are. We will try to get information to you when we know with certainty that we can give you facts and not speculation and not supposition. So I'm going to ask that you bear with us. This is a very complicated crime scene, and an incident that spanned over 9 hours involved dozens of officers. And as I've indicated, at this time, we're not even certain as to the number of potential victims in this incident. With that, I would like to bring up Chief Ward to briefly give you a summation, similar to what was provided this morning, with any additional information that he might have that we're in a position to confirm at this time. Chief Michael Moore, commanding officer of our Valley Bureau. Step to your side, sir.
Thank you, Chief. Late last night, as been reported, a male caller telephoned 911 and reported that he had killed a number of individuals and come and get them. Over the next couple hours, he made an ongoing series of calls with different numbers and different statements as to the circumstances of this residence that officers responded to. Officers, upon their arrival from West Valley area, met the location and had a brief conversation, we understand, with the suspect, who continued to provide information that led the officers to believe that there were victims inside that were possibly, in the officers' belief, still alive. SWAT Metropolitan officers responded, met with the West Valley officers, and immediately put an immediate action rapid response team together to assault this location. Their intention going to this location was to enter the location and rescue any of the downed victims that were inside and still might be alive. As the officers invoked that plan and they approached the door and they made entry, they were met with a barrage of gunfire. Two of our officers were met immediately with that gunfire and went down. The officers pushed forward in their tactical plan, discovered three victims down inside, victims of apparent gunshot wounds, all males and all down on the floor in different parts of the residence. Believing one of the three were still alive, they attempted and did in fact complete a rescue of that individual, while also attempting to rescue their two fallen officers. Those officers and the fallen victim from inside were taken outside. We had Los Angeles Fire Department, and I must absolutely commend their immediate and absolute life-saving efforts with both of our officers. Unfortunately, the victim that was inside was declared dead when they checked on him in front of the yard. We immediately responded with even more additional resources from throughout the city. We reformulated, locked down the perimeter of this event, and began going at this problem again. Fortunately, we were able to identify who we believe to be two family members of our suspect who attempted to reach out to this suspect through telephone calls and bullhorns. That went on for a long period of time and was met with absolute silence and no response from the suspect. We moved the plan into a tear gas mode where we began deploying tear gas into the residence, and immediately we had movement by the suspect seen by our officers, as well as a woman exit from the back of the residence running, attempting to escape. We rescued her, brought her away from the scene, and she began talking with us as to what had occurred inside, and those discussions continued. Our tactical plan continued. We continued to make efforts to gain the custody of this suspect by causing him to exit the residence. He engaged in a number of barrages of gunfire with our officers, ultimately resulting in his demise. He was handcuffed, and during the course of this assault by the suspect against our officers, a fire broke out inside the building, a residence that was seen by many of you and reported on. LA Fire, again, great partners of ours with proper force protection, made every effort to come up and ensure the safety of the homes around there that had already been evacuated, but the safety of the structures, while also trying to douse the flames and save this suspect again. At the end of this operation, this suspect was declared dead outside the location, and the investigation has now transitioned into robbery homicide and Force Investigation Division for a very detailed and thorough investigation as to what brought this event about, the background of all parties involved, actions taken, and the outcomes that we see here before us. Thank you.
Let me acknowledge the president of the City Council, Eric Garcetti, who's here with us today, Councilmember Dennis Zine, Councilmember Jack Weiss, Councilmember Jan Perry, the Vice President of the Police Commission, John Mack. I'm going to say a few words in Spanish. Quiero decir que hoy es un día muy trágico aquí en la ciudad de Los Ángeles. Hemos perdido un oficial de la policía y tres más heridos. Ayer me llamaron en la madrugada, vine al hospital, hablé con la familia, estuvo aquí en este área del incidente, y te puedo decir que para nosotros este es algo, un día muy pesada, muy trágica. También es personal porque los dos oficiales, Vinstra y Simmons, que se murió, fue asignado a mis hijos durante el verano. Los conocí, como dijo el jefe de la policía, Bratton, fueron uno de los dos más valientes, con más experiencia que tenemos en este departamento de policía. Hoy es un día trágico. Estamos compartiendo con las familias, dándolos nuestras oraciones en estos momentos. With that, I'll let the chief or anyone else respond to any questions.
Yeah, and information we're dealing with is preliminary. I'd emphasize that it may change as the investigation goes forward, but to the best of our ability, we'll try to respond to some of your questions.
Again, identity of the suspect.
We are still working to confirm those identities, that the deceased are still on the property. They have not gone to the coroner yet. So until such time as we turn them over to the coroner, we're not in a position to confirm. Several of the victims inside the house are very badly burned. And so it may take us a while to confirm identities of who we actually have.
Can you tell us about some gang violence in this area?
I can ask Chief Moore to speak to that particular issue. Chief Moore.
As we spoke earlier, we have had no indication of this home to my knowledge at this point. Our initial look upon our arrival here was to look just at that issue. What instances have we been at this home in the past? And our preliminary review of that, this is not a special location. This is not a habitual location where it's known to our officers. And that extends also to the issue of gang violence. I heard that question earlier. There are instances of gang violence in various parts of the San Fernando Valley. This location, to my knowledge, is not a hardened area where we have explicit acts of blatant gang violence on this street. This is a peaceful street. It's a street that, like many other streets in the San Fernando Valley, that are filled with just hardworking men and women. We're still exploring, as the Chief Bratton indicated, we're still investigating the circumstances of who these individuals were, their relationships one to another, and before we release any of that information, we're going to be firm in our understanding. We have a tragedy here beyond recognition. We've lost an officer, we've lost a multitude of people, and we're not going to just blindly throw out a name because we think it might be this person.
But sir, did the lady, can you just give us...
I cannot, I'm sorry.
What the lady...
Give us an approximate age of the gunman and whether or not you know anything about past run-ins with law enforcement.
We have a lot of information about who we believe is the gunman, who we believe is among the deceased. But again, until we confirm identities with the coroner, until we confirm conversations we'll be having with the surviving member that was in this house, I'm not at liberty to give you information because we don't have confirmation of that information ourselves at this time.
The neighborhood of the brotherhood of these two officers, obviously they've both been on the SWAT team for more than 20 years. We know that there's a sort of brotherhood bonding. These were two of the first guys to go in. Obviously they're leaders. Can we just talk about maybe their relationship and what role they played in the SWAT?
The SWAT unit, the men and women who make up that unit, an extraordinary group. You know, you cover these events. This is the first time that we have lost an officer in the history of that organization. These people are incredibly close. They're close in terms of their personal life. They're close in terms of their professional life. They're also very close to many other SWAT units around the United States and abroad. We have been receiving a phenomenal infusion of condolences from many of the men and women who they train with, who they compete with around the country. Use the brotherhood, the sisterhood, because the units are now both men and women. But the bond that they have is an incredibly close one because of the incredible dangers that they face. Hundreds upon hundreds, if not thousands, of incidents where they've faced something just like this and it has gone off without injury to themselves or to suspects or victims. This is tearing them up quite a bit. As you might imagine, I had the opportunity at the hospital to meet with many of them. And this is something that is deeply felt myself, certainly as chief of the department. And in the brotherhood and sisterhood of policing, we have lost an extraordinary, extraordinary human being. He was privileged and proud to be a SWAT officer in the Los Angeles Police Department. But first and foremost, he was an incredible human being. The stories I've been hearing about him from family, from friends, from colleagues, that he was truly, apparently, one of a kind. That's all I can say. And I'm sure in the days ahead we'll hear much more about him and the life he committed himself to and the lives that he saved. Because quite obviously his work trying to save young children in this city was exemplary.
Can you offer any information as to why this got started in the first place? The
We don't have that yet. We're not in a bit, again, we're dealing with preliminary information. So we work through some of our call records for how many times have we been to this house? Have we been to it? Have we dealt with anybody in that house? And again, we're dealing with, unfortunately at this time, no confirmed identity. So that's what's going to take us a while. We, again, because of the nature of this event, ATF and Fire Arson had to get in there first. So that delayed our robbery homicide and our Force Investigation Division from getting in to start there. Their work. You covered this, you were here. This is an extraordinarily significant event, extraordinarily complex one, and it's going to take us a while to sort it all out. And as we sort it out, as is our practice, we'll try to get facts to you and not supposition.
Chief, as far as tactics go, when there's an armed suspect, is it common procedure to go in when you know there's an armed person?
There are a number of protocols that SWAT trains to, that are trained to by most SWAT units around the country. And they try to, while you can never conceive of every circumstance, they try to train to just about everything they can imagine. One of the things that they train to is that if there is a belief that a hostage or an innocent is in danger, that they will seek to make entry into a home, whereas if it is a barricaded person, a person who might only be in a position to harm himself or herself, it gives them a lot more latitude. But in this circumstance, that we have a phone call from an individual, we have ability to monitor and listen, individual indicating six people in the house, he has already killed three. So that indicates to us that the shooter and two others may be in there being held against their will. And as we saw with the rescue this morning when the bear knocked down the back wall, indeed there was an innocent who was hiding in a closet who was able to exit the house unharmed. So there are all types of protocols and training. Based on our preliminary review of this, SWAT did what we would have expected of them to do, and it cost one of our officers his life, another officer a very significant facial injury, and two other officers, but also the trauma to these officers who work so closely together. These are about as tough as you can get, these officers, and something like this just tears them up to that extent that over the next several days I'll be basically allowing these officers time to come together, to grieve, to assist the family, assist each other. And the Sheriff's Department and the FBI have graciously responded to our request that they stand by to assist us if we have SWAT incidents over the next several days. It's something that we have protocols in place that if the Sheriff, the FBI have an incident involving their teams, we'd be there to back them up, and we'll do this.
About the initial response, what the first officers that came here saw, or what did they see that they made them call the SWAT team?
Well, you had the initial call in and of itself, the individual claiming he had killed three people and that there were six people in the house. That brings initial officers, but that would also, under our protocols, basically raise the level of concern to start bringing SWAT into the scene. And that's effectively what happened last evening.
Did the suspect die in custody with handcuffs on?
I can't speak to that. I can't speak to that. I don't have that information.
Chief Brass, I know that you don't want to tell us what conversation took place between this person you call in and this and your investigators. I understand that, but could you at least help us understand, was she an older woman? Was she your grandmother? Her age range?
At this stage, again, I cannot give that information to you to have a chance to ascertain who, in fact, made the call or calls, and was it, in fact, the suspect? Was it, in fact, somebody in the house? We can't share that at this particular point in time. There were, basically, as I understand it, Michael,
multiple calls.
Okay.
Can you tell us what kind of weapon the suspect
used? I can't speak to that. Sorry.
What kind of weapon did the suspect use?
Suspect had at least two weapons they're aware of. We believe a shotgun and a handgun. And again, as we search the house, we'll hopefully identify if, in fact, that was the two weapons he had, or he may have possibly had more.
That first call, he said, come and get me? Is that what he said?
Again, I'm giving you preliminary information, and I'm paraphrasing, and I'm not giving you any specifics as to that call, other than that what we were responding to was an individual indicating that he had killed three people and that there were six people in the house, indicating to us that there may have been two other innocents in that house as we were responding to it.
Okay. Earlier,
the officers did that IED. Did they have, when the officers did that immediate action, to go in there and get those people out? They have an indication where this suspect was. Did he, in fact, have himself secreted somewhere? Did he fire off the cover? Did he even have a chance to see him?
I can't speak to that, not had an opportunity. The officers involved, to the best of my knowledge, have not even given public safety statements yet. So in terms of some of what they were dealing with, that again, that will be part of the investigation going forward as to what they had to work with as they began their entry.
Do you believe that suspect fired people, all the people there?
As of this juncture, we believe that there was one suspect, one shooter, that effectively caused all this carnage, with the exception of apparently taking the life of the suspect.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you all. Appreciate your coverage of this. Thank you, sir.